I'm Allison Jacobson, a transformational coach for women in midlife who are ready to rediscover who they were before they took on the roles of mom, partner, caregiver, and manager of everyone in the family. Women who are ready to live out their dreams but don't know or are afraid to take those first steps. I want to help you make midlife the time when you achieve all of your goals. So let's get started. Hi, everybody, and thank you for joining us again for Midlife Mavericks. This is season two, which I'm so excited about. We've had some great guests in the past, and I'm so glad you've come along with me on the ride because I've really enjoyed podcasting and connecting with so many people. My name is Allison Jacobson. For those of you who are not familiar with this podcast, we are dedicated to bringing health, wellness tips, anything to help women in midlife live their best life. And I bring on women who have done inspirational things in the second half of their life, as well as experts that can help us. If you like what you're hearing, please, please, please sign up so that you can follow us, leave a rating. I also have a book on Amazon, Midlife Daily Inspirations for Midlife Women, A Guide to Peace, Joy, Happiness, and Abundance. And I've got a Facebook group that is very active. We've got wonderful women in there that you can also join. It is also Midlife Mavericks. So I'm so excited today. You know, I love having women on in every different profession and area. And I love having coaches on because I believe there's not enough coaches in this world right now. So many of us, I mean, I have my own coaches as well. So many of us can use that help and that inspiration and just that nudge along. And what's great about podcasting is you just run across people. It's very interesting how we meet. And my next guest, I honestly don't even remember how we connected, but I'm so glad we did. Her name is Kim Adams. She is a woman who really helps women with high-functioning anxiety discover self-acceptance and shift those self-limiting beliefs using a blend of psychology, yoga, yes, yes, yes to yoga, and grounded spirituality to feel more calm, confident, and connected to what is really important for them. So welcome, Kim.
Thank you, Allison. Wonderful to be here.
And you are coming from where?
I am in Cairns, Australia, so right up the top, Great Barrier Reef area. So beautiful, tropical, warm. I love it. I love the sun. I love palm trees.
And I have to tell you, I visited Cairns when I was probably 25. And you're right. It's just such a beautiful place. And I'll be honest with you, I lived in LA for 10 years. I really feel it's easy to be more spiritual, more grounded when you're in this tropical paradise. I just look at your background now and with palm trees and the sun, and I just feel relaxed.
Exactly. I grew up here when I was a child. I was born and bred up here, a country girl. And then as most of us do when we grow up in the country, I headed off to the city as soon as I could to, you know, chase a career and chase the bright lights and thinking that it is all so much better than being in a regional or country location. But then 7 years ago, I came back and you're absolutely correct. There's a different energy, a different vibe, a sense of connection, I think, to nature. And so it does attract a lot of people who are interested in health and well-being. And it certainly is easier, I think, to connect with those things and to live a life that is really more healthy and just connected, I guess, when you're living in such a beautiful, warm location.
Yeah, I just came back this summer. I took a trip with my mom to Alaska. And I've always been a warm weather girl, but she wanted to go. And I said, let's go. And it was truly majestic. I mean, the water was the seafoam green and just gliding past the glaciers. It was truly a spiritual moment where I really did. I disconnected, which is very rare for me, but I disconnected from social media, from everything. And I just was present. And you know, I think you would agree with me, finding when you don't live in a paradise like you do, finding those moments of connection in the midst of chaos
is so important.
Oh, definitely. And it is much harder. So I think it has to become more of an intentional activity. Here for me, I go for my morning walk, and that's my quiet time, my connection, my getting out and connecting with, you know, my soul, I guess, having those moments. But if in the middle of urban living, or if, you know, my children are all grown up and left home now, but if you have young children or if you have other responsibilities, it can be really hard to carve out that moment where you get to check in with yourself or deal with stress or sort out what's going on in your mind. If you're, you know, caught up with a bit of overwhelm, it can be really challenging. And it's all good for someone like myself to go, oh, go for a walk on the beach. Put your feet in the sand. I mean, that is wonderful, but a lot of people don't have that option. So I think you have to look at how you can work that into your life, wherever that may be at the time.
Yeah. And many people in my audience, so you and I both work with women in life, midlife, and there are so many of those daily challenges of caring for aging parents, your adult children, they never really leave, even if geographically they leave. And as many people know, so my second husband has primary progressive MS. I have a son with intellectual disabilities. I had a son who died of SIDS. So yeah, finding those moments. And that's what I really talk about with people. It's just, even if you just walk outside, just change that environment and get out of your head, because it's so easy. And, you know, I'm so impressed. I'd love you to tell a little bit about your story, how you got to where you are.
For sure. So I used to work with police services here in Australia. We call them police service. I think you call them a police force over there. There's a lot of debate around that name and the meaning of that. But I work in criminal justice and police services for over 20 years, and I loved it. I loved it. I loved being part of that police culture, that sense of being a family. I did research and more organisational psychology type of work, looking at performance improvement for the organisation. And I really loved the type of people I was working with. It was fast-paced. And I really bought into that fast-paced, status-driven, ambitious-driven mentality, I guess, and particularly because it was a very male-dominated organisation. And I loved working with men, but I really prided myself, I guess, on being one of the boys. And so keeping up that bravado, there was a lot of, I guess, alcohol-fueled socialising, alcohol-fueled stress relief. So there's that whole environment where I was on fire, not realising that underneath I was really struggling with anxiety. But I don't know if you or your listeners have heard of the term high-functioning anxiety, which is, it's not technically a diagnosis, but it is a way that anxiety can show up, where on the outside, people looking in, or even yourself looking at yourself, see confident, see, you know, a big thinker, see someone who is bold and takes on tasks, a bit of a perfectionist, which is a bit, you know, valued in our society, like go multitask, do everything, be confident. Whereas on the inside, there is a lot of self-doubt. That perfectionism is actually a very negative thing, because it is driving you to achieve from a place of fear. Or a place of not being, wanting to be the best you can be, and that never actually feeling enough. And so that's where things like, you know, the alcohol and drinking, and I was very much in, I didn't realize at the time either, eating disorder, in terms of I was ridiculously stringent with my exercise and eating in order to stay a certain weight and a certain look, because the look was also very important to me at the time. It was all part of that whole showing up as I wanted to be, as the perfect person in the world,
or as you assumed was perfect, your vision.
Yes, exactly, because if I wasn't, then I wasn't good enough. And I think there's a lot of stuff we can go back into where all that sort of conditioning comes from, but I didn't realize it at the time, and often you don't, because you're winning, you're getting promoted, people are saying you're so good, you're part of the team. And then there was a big organizational restructure back in 2015, I think it was, and my position disappeared. And with that was my belonging. I didn't belong anymore. My status was gone. My sense of connection was gone. My sense of value was gone. And it really impacted me more than I even realized at the time, because I still think that bravado was there. Like, well, you know, they can, oh, I don't want to swear on your podcast, but it was like, okay. Well, stuff them. I'm okay. And I don't need them. And I'm fine. Thank you very much. When in reality, I wasn't. And I guess a bit of impulsivity came up then, and I saw an opportunity to do volunteer English teaching in Bali with teenagers, something totally not in my arena of, you know, something I'd ever.
But you were in Bali. I would do anything. I would just like mow lawns or rake beaches if I could be in Bali. That's the midlife crisis.
That's because I'd been to Bali previously and I had felt that spiritual connection there, because yes, it is a culture where they live their spirituality. Like every action during their day is around their beliefs. And it is something beautiful to experience. And I thought, well, I'm going to live there for a few months and I'll teach teenagers. How hard can that be? Well,
Lily girl.
Yes. For someone who was a bit of a control freak and a perfectionist and was used to having structure and agendas and, you know, this is the right way to do things, it was a bit of a shock when it wasn't like that. And people didn't turn up to class because they had family responsibilities. I really didn't know what I was doing. There was no agendas for the day. It was very loose for me at that time. I was thinking, oh my goodness, you know. So there was a few tears the first week thinking, what have I done? I can't do this. And then the turning point was when I realized that it wasn't actually all about me. It was about these students, the children, and what they wanted from me was my presence. They just wanted to be, they were so excited to have an Australian person or any other nationality person who was coming doing the volunteering. Interesting side note, they told me after I got there, I was the oldest volunteer they'd ever had, which was, I don't know, I guess that was good. It felt funny at the time. But the children just wanted me to be present and talk to them and share ideas and share information. And it wasn't about me at all. And I had to stop making it about myself. Wow. And once I let go of that and made it about them, I had the best time. It was wonderful. It was really a turning point.
And I'm sure you got as much out of them as they got out of you.
Oh, yes. Just we live in such a fast-paced world and a very individualistic world in our Western countries. And they don't. It's very different. And to see that connection with each other, see that connection even with themselves in a very what appeared to me at the time is a naive way compared to, say, teenagers in our country. Mm-hmm. They're very naive, and I don't mean that in that they didn't know things. It was just their way of connecting with each other wasn't overlaid with this rush to be an adult or standing out for themselves. It was that really community feel and working with family and spirits, their spirituality.
And I have to say, I'm sure they weren't having their heads buried in a phone on TikTok the entire time. I mean, you know, look, you're right on with this rush to grow up. I was just talking to a friend about that. And yeah, this urgency to be mature because of what they're seeing on social media, I'm sure that just didn't exist over there.
I think it might have changed now, unfortunately. My last visit, it's seeing it just being infiltrated. But at the time, you know, that was nearly 10 years ago, it still really wasn't as big a thing. It was starting. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, it was starting with the girls. And I do remember this, is they very much look to Korean aesthetic values and the idea having a lighter skin. So there was that whole push where Korean pop music was becoming very popular. The Korean aesthetic of having the paler skin was very, so the girls were being very driven to bleach their skin or use skin lightening products, which I was just As someone with freckly European skin, their beautiful olive skin I thought was amazing. And, you know, as the usual is, we don't like what we have and we want what we don't have.
Right.
Yeah, so it was very hard to even buy skin cleansers and moisturizers that didn't have bleach in them in the local pharmacies. Yes.
Interesting. Yes. So the light went on for you and then you came back. And then what happened?
And then I decided I really wanted to step more into, I really enjoy the Buddhism and the style of Hinduism that Balinese have, which is slightly different to Indian Hinduism, because they still have very animalistic sort of aspects to that. And I really dived deeper into that. I decided I wanted to be a yoga teacher. And then I was lucky enough to go back to Bali to do my yoga teacher training there with a wonderful Australian teacher. And I really then did start to look into body image, and I did my eating psychology coaching certificate, because that was something I started to realize was shaping my life and how I thought about myself. And they say we teach what we need to learn ourselves. And I became immersed in that and started working with women around. Generally, it was women who had struggled with weight loss all their life and had done all the dieting things. And it really wasn't about the food at all. So looking at that aspect of things. So that's where I started to go with my life then, realizing because I wanted something that was more important and more meaningful and had more in alignment with, I think, what I was called to do, which I was still working out, and maybe I still am, but I think that's a life journey.
I think it's a life journey, and I think it should be a life journey. I think we're constantly evolving. So I was looking at your website and all that you offer, and one of the programs and one of the aspects you talk about is co-creation. Now, I'm big on co-creation, but I'd love you to talk about it from your perspective.
Yes, I really love the idea of co-creation and moving beyond we hear a lot of manifestation, you know, affirmations, saying mantras, all are wonderful things to do and very useful for helping maybe shift the energy or the mindset within yourself. I think where a lot of people stop is the affirmations and then waiting for things to happen. And, you know, I write, you know, 10 times that I'm going to make $1 million or that I am, I'm beautiful or all those sorts of things, and then wonder why nothing shifts. Or we read lots of books about a certain topic that we want to heal in ourselves. And I'm very guilty of this because I'm a person who naturally wants to sit in my head. I'm a learner. I like to understand things, and I struggle sometimes to feel things as fully as I should because I want to get stuck. Well, I tend to get stuck in the knowing, and I think a lot of people do that. So for me, the co-creation is getting out of the knowing or getting out of the learning and get into the feeling and then the action, because co-creation isn't just about putting it out there into the universe or to God or to whatever source energy you want to call that and saying, okay, this is what I want. I am ready for it. You have to put the work in too. And that's what co-creation is about. It is learning, understanding yourself, really getting a clear idea of where you want to be and what that will look like, what that will feel like, and then start to take some action towards that, because I think that's the step a lot of us miss is implementing the vision.
Well, and I think we purposely miss it, right? Like that's what I talk about as a coach too. I talk about the fact that I'm one part spirituality, one part practicality. You can't wait for you can't envision Mr. Right and then sit home on your couch and imagine he's going to knock on the door, unless maybe he's the Amazon delivery guy. I don't know. But exactly, you know, if you're choosing to change your life like you did, you went to Bali, you did something. And you're right. I think so many people have those limiting beliefs still in them of, I can't do it. I'm just going to sit here. So yeah, I think that's so important.
Definitely. And it's even beyond the limiting beliefs, which I think is a big one. It's that sense of, I think it's the fear and the limiting beliefs. The fear, we can really want something, yet be afraid of doing it.
You know, one of the things I saw on your website is a free video that you have, and your website is kimadams.au. And so for many people here in the US, it's .au, kimadams.au, and it'll be all in the show notes. But one of the things on your site is a free video, 5 ways to build self-trust, shine your inner confidence. What do you mean by self-trust?
Yes, it's interesting. Self-trust, it seems almost obvious that we should trust ourselves. But what I see, I think in myself, but in a lot of people that I've worked with or just know, is that we do lose our ability to trust our inner intuition, higher self, gut feeling, whatever that may be. And I think a lot of that comes from society and culture, and as women wanting to make the right decision, wanting to, the good girl archetype, the wanting to do the right thing. And maybe we have been through life, as we all do, and we all make bad decisions, and sometimes start to then second guess ourselves. And especially if you have anxiety or high functioning anxiety and want to be perfect, that decision making gets kind of stuck in a bit of a loop, trying to get it right, trying to do what is right, trying to do it perfectly. And then we don't trust ourselves to make decisions, so we get stuck in the decision making. It's almost like a freeze response, I guess. And what we do know is when we freeze and don't make decisions for ourselves, someone else will probably make the decision for us. And that's not the most empowering thing to do.
Right. So give us just 2 ways so that we can tease the audience a little bit. What are 2 ways you can start building self-trust?
I think one of the things that is really important, and something that becomes easy to me, but I've noticed doesn't necessarily come easy to a lot of people, is spending time with yourself. Mm-hmm. And I mean, not spending time with yourself watching Netflix. Mm-hmm. I mean, actual quiet time. So many people have no quiet time or alone time at all during their day. And when they do, it feels really uncomfortable. It's like, I'm here with my own thoughts. What do I do? So I really encourage trying to find some quiet time. That might be going for a walk without your earphones on, silence. So you're just with your thoughts. I was talking to a client the other day who did that for the first time, and it was interesting to me because I enjoy that, and that's often where I get my ideas. She said it was so uncomfortable. 5 minutes into the walk, she was like, I can't do this. I need to go home. We're so attuned to having information flooding into us all the time. No wonder we're overwhelmed and get stuck. So I think for me, finding quiet time, whatever that looks like for you, it doesn't have to be sitting in silence, meditating. It can be out walking. It might be going and having a coffee or lunch on your own, which is really uncomfortable for a lot of people.
Isn't that interesting? I've traveled so much where I eat by myself, but you're right. I bring that up to clients and you'd think I was suggesting they jump off a bridge. The thought of just sitting by themselves at a dinner it's amazing how it's uncomfortable for them.
Yes. Yes, but it is all, it not only does it give you space, but it's quite empowering. And if you've traveled, Alison, and done that yourself, it is really, once you get over that hump of being, what are people thinking of me? Do they think I'm a loner or a loser? It's actually just really freeing because you can do whatever you want when you want. And spending time with your own thoughts, I think for me, is number one, because I think it's something that many people don't take the time to do. And if you can't spend time with your own thoughts, how will you know what it is that you actually want?
Well, do you think that people are afraid to spend time with their own thoughts because they're scared? They're scared of releasing that Pandora's box that's in their head.
Yes. And I know that myself when I get, when I start to spiral into my anxiety, is what the first thing I want to do is distract myself. So it's a distraction. I scroll meaninglessly on Instagram, or I start researching some random product that, an hour in, why am I looking at feathered down quilts? Or, something, anything to distract ourselves. So I do think it is fear of really going there, because while you're distracted and you're busy, you don't really have to deal with anything that might be a little painful. Right. And that's easier. And I get that. I do that. It's a natural thing. But if we don't step into that and feel it, process it, and move on, then we're never going to let that beast go. It will always be riding on our back and then impacting how we make decisions or how we don't make decisions in our life.
Yeah. And number two.
I'll jump down, I think, to the fifth one, which was self-compassion. When we're trying to improve ourselves or deal with our stuff or whatever it is, or trying to lose weight or trying to get a promotion or just deal with maybe some trauma we've had, we're so hard on ourselves. And if we can't be compassionate, we'll never be able to trust our decision, because we won't want to make the wrong decision. We'll be saying, oh my goodness, I'm such a fool. I always stuff this up. I always make a mistake. I'm so stupid. We're human. We will make mistakes. If you're not making a mistake, you're probably not growing or learning. And I don't like making mistakes. And I can be very hard on myself as a recovering perfectionist. And you know, the high functioning anxiety is about, you know, being the best according to yourself, is about being, you know, seen as valuable and capable. But you will make mistakes. And most of the time, it's really not as bad as you think. So being compassionate to yourself, being kind to yourself, speaking to yourself like you would to your best friend, and knowing that we have to learn in order to grow, and that's okay. Yeah. You can trust yourself. Learning to have compassion and kindness towards yourself, I think, is really hard. It's very hard for women who have learned to be very judgmental of themselves and then of others. And then we kind of get in that loop of judging others and judging ourselves and thinking they're judging us, and therefore we stop doing things. So it becomes an awful judgmental loop. So compassion.
And I would think that being in your former career around in a very male dominated career, that vulnerability, that self-forgiveness probably didn't come in a lot with men.
From my experience, I often found men, the male officers, to be very supportive. But there is that bravado, I think, more between them. Maybe I didn't experience it because I was the female. But, yeah, you're correct. There's that bravado aspect, I think, to that style, that career, that personality that goes into a career like that.
And that's probably, I agree with you. I think it is the career, because if you look at probably other male-driven careers, I mean, even CEOs, just, you know, Wall Street execs, it's a certain type of woman that can be in that male-dominated, and it's hard to keep that up.
It is. Interestingly enough, probably, it would have been 2004, I was working in a national police research centre, so across Australia, and my work then was on senior female police officers, so those at very high rank, looking at their challenges and issues. And sadly, a lot of the feedback we got was around women would talk at the lower level about needing to bring other women along, and when they got up into higher levels that they would be supportive. And sometimes that happened, but a lot of the time that didn't. When the women got to the higher level, literally I saw it in some of my surveys, well, they need to learn that this is the way they have to, you know, they need to suck it up if they want to get ahead. So I think it is that nature of the beast, the nature of the organization, that when you get to the top, sometimes you can lose maybe that compassion.
Which we need to change, and that's why we need more coaches.
Yes.
To give permission to change,
yes.
Right?
And to go, it's okay to bring your personality or your style up rather than adapt your style, which may already have some of those elements to it, because I don't think we completely change ourselves. But I think there's elements of your personality that get amplified as the higher you go in a career, or maybe the wealthier you become. I remember there's a saying, and I'm not sure who said it, something about, it's not that wealthy people, it's not money that's the issue. It's how you choose to use it when you get a lot of it. And it's probably the same with power. So
yeah.
So having coaches or someone to help you become a senior person in that organization and bring your own style and hopefully compassion and vulnerability along with you.
Right. I think that is so important. So you also have a Facebook group, Find Your Groove, Self-Acceptance and Confidence with Women 40 and Beyond. And I'll put that up there. I love talking to other coaches. I just think there's so much room. And that gets back to that collaboration, that supporting one another. And I do think that's so important. What's the best advice you would leave with my community right now?
That's a big question, Alison. What's the best advice? My Facebook group's called Find Your Groove, and I just love that phrase. And so I think that's what I'll lead with, is that for me, it's about finding who you are. And that might be very different to who anyone else is. And a lot of our anxiety, overwhelm, you know, not feeling like we fit in is because often I think so many of us, we are pretending to be who we're not in order to fit in. We want to belong, and nothing wrong with wanting to belong. We all want to belong. But finding that calm and confidence comes from a place of really understanding who you are and learning to make that the best person. A possible version of you. So don't try to be like anyone else. Be inspired by other people, but spend that time with yourself to work out really who you are and how you want to shine in the world.
And I think as we get older in midlife, it becomes easier. We let down a lot of that facade and say, this is who I am. I'm tired of the BS. I'm going to be me. So that's why I love midlife women as well. Well, Kim, thank you so much. I would love to come visit you. I'm just looking at your beautiful background.
Oh, I'd love that.
And then I can become certified in yoga, and I can do yoga in Bali with you, and it would all be wonderful.
We can run a retreat in Bali for midlife women. Find their groove. They can reinvent themselves. They can love themselves and enjoy Bali at the same time.
A retreat in Bali. I think we need to do that next year. I'm liking that. Well, Kim, thank you so much. And everybody, have a great rest of your day. Bye now.